we are in Shoftim Perek Vav, making our way through this sixth chapter. This is, we've known this for a few weeks, it's very hard to remember Devorah. But we talked our way through Midyan. If anyone sees Toronto Torah the Shabbos, the Parsha article is a digest of what we did with Midyan. We then, after introducing Midian, after introducing Gideon, talking a little bit about his complexity, we talked about the oppression of the Jews under Midian and read the opening part of the Perek about how Midian is raiding them for their food. They're losing their animals as well. The Navi sends a message of rebuke to the nation. And then Gideon has his first encounter in which he speaks with someone who we discussed. Is it a Malach? Is it a Navi? Right? Well, Bag, taking the view that it's a Navi. The general view, though, is that this is a Malach. And the Malach says, you are a Gibor Chayil. You are a warrior. And again, this, we said, is either that he is giving Gideon strength, or that he's saying, I see in you strength. And remember that Gideon said to the Malach, his opening words to the Malach were, why is it that that God has abandoned us? Why doesn't God do the miracles that he did for us before? And our response, the response of the Malach was, Lech b'chocha chazeh, go with your strength, go with exactly this power with which you fight on behalf of the Jewish people, or go with the power I have given you, depending on how you take it. And Gideon says, I want a sign, right? That was what we talked about last time. I want an oath, which we explained could mean, I don't know that you're a legitimate emissary of God, or I don't know that this is actually going to come true. Perhaps what's going to happen is you're going to, you're saying that if we deserve it, then it will happen, but then you'll say, well, we didn't deserve it. So Gideon asks for a sign from the Malach, and we read the Pesukim last time, but we didn't actually see it inside in terms of what happened. So that's what we're going to pick up. Perek Vav, Pasuk Yud Tes, chapter 6, sentence 19. V'gid'on ba, v'yas gidi izim ve'efas kemach matzos. He takes a young goat, he prepares a goat, and he also prepares an epha of flour to make into matzah. The matzah could be related to it being Pesach, or might not be, matzah also being generic. Although the question, of course, is why would you give them matzah? Give him something that rose, unless the answer is he makes it on the spot. Yes, but again, that could be Pesach, or that could just be generic as well. Well, with Abraham, he doesn't. Lot does. Lot's the one who does the matzah. Yeah. But then, he prepares the animal, he prepares the matzah, and then habasar samba sal, puts the meat in a basket, v'hamarak samba parur, the broth is in a pot, and brings it to him underneath the tree where he had been waiting in the beginning. So on this point, an epha of flour. So Dan Mikra notes something remarkable, which I would not have realized, and the commentary says I didn't really discuss this either, but once he says it, you look at it and think, wow, that's really interesting. An epha is 3 sa'ah. Three sa'ah ring a bell at all? Where in the Torah do we find 3 sa'ah?
Is it also with Avram?
Yep.
Also, maybe when the
Menachem
came.
Right, it's 3 sa'ah that are used to make the bread for the malachim. Shlosh se'im kemach solas. Correct. So 3 sa'ah is what Abraham uses to give a gift to the malachim, and it's what Gideon uses to give a gift to this malach. So that's another Abraham association, which I find fascinating. And also, worth noting, an epha in modern, well, take metric measurements, 25 liters, roughly. 25 liters of flour.
That's a lot of flour.
That's an awful lot of flour, right, that you're using. Now, you don't actually turn all of that into bread. What you do is you then sift it to get the finest of the fine out of that, which is what you would do if you were, you know, honoring somebody. That's the way you would do it, is you want to give the best. So you start with this huge quantity, and then you sift it down. So that shows the generosity of Abraham in that story, and then here with Gideon. It's a ridiculously large amount of flour. And there's only one in this case. Correct. So, but in terms of this, the original reference with Malach, with Matzah, it's Lod in that story. It's not Abram. Abram is Ugot. So, the Malach says to him, Vayomer Malach Elokim, Perek Vav Pasachav, chapter 6, sentence 20. The Malach says to him, Kach es habasar, take the meat, v'es hamatzos, as well as the matzah, v'hanachil hasela halaz, and put it on that stone. Okay, keep your eye on that stone, because it's going to matter. V'es hamarak shefoch, and pour out the broth. So, you could look at it and say that the Malach doesn't like broth, except the Malach isn't going to eat any of it anyway. So that's not what it is. Are you all right? What do you have?
I don't know what I have.
Oh.
619.
620 now.
Oh,
right. Well, we read it through quickly.
Yeah,
so you could say he doesn't like the broth. The Dat Mikra suggests... That's why. The Dat Mikra suggests that it's because broth isn't suitable for Mizdayach. We don't bring broth on the altar. However, Barbanel says something that I think is stronger on this. He says that it's not just poured out like on the ground. It's poured out on the spot where the miracle is about to happen. And that should ring a bell. Pouring it out on the rock where the miracle is about to happen resembles what? No. No.
No, Moses.
No.
Eliyahu.
Eliyahu on Har HaKarmel, right, when he does this big miracle for everybody, in which he brings fire from the heavens to consume the karban, he dumps water all over, 12 troughs of water, representing the 12 Shvatim, perhaps. So here, this Malach, and again, if you take the view that it's Pinchas, that just feeds into it, Pinchas equals Eliyahu, so it's the same person, it says, I want you to pour out the broth on the stone, and then, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, 21, look what he does. Vayishlach Malach Hashem es kitzei ha-mishenes asher biyado, he sends forth the end of the stick that he has. Again, why the Malach has a walking stick, I don't know. Vayiga babasaru v'amatzos, and he touches the meat, he touches the matzah. Vatal ha-esh min hatzur, and fire comes up from the stone. He changes tzur and selah here, unclear why. In the Torah, they're used differently, right? As a matter of fact, the stories with Moshe speaking to the rock and hitting the rock, in one case it's a tzur, in the other case it's a selah. So there is a distinction. So if you look at Malbim there, I think he draws a distinction between tzur, and not here, but on the Chumash, I believe he draws a distinction between tzur and selah, but I don't remember anymore what the distinction is. I've written an article about it once, but I don't remember what I wrote. Oh well. Maybe I'll follow up afterwards and send out an email with it. But maybe. So put it down on this selah. I'm sorry, he already did that. The Malach sends out the stick, touches this stuff, and Batal Ishman Atsur, fire emerges from the tzur. Not coming down from Shemayim, but instead coming up from the tzur. V'tochales habasar v'es hamatzos. It consumes the meat. It consumes the matzah. U'malach Hashem halach me'enav, and the malach disappears. That's your your story. So it's interesting. I didn't think about that before. The fire comes up from below instead of coming down from Shemayim. That's interesting in its own right, but. This is the miracle that's performed by the Malach. Fine.
They came and they went. They opened the door and they left.
Okay. All right. So, Vayar Gidon, ki Malach Hashem hu. Gidon says, oh, okay, this is a Malach. sorry, just to note on your sheet, I brought it in source number one. This is Ralbag who makes that link. He says, "Vizet domel mofish shenasan Eliyahu b'har Karmel." He says that makes this like the miracle that Eliyahu performs on Mount Carmel. "V'hine peulos ha'navi domos mitzad lepeulos Eliyahu." So he says, what the Navi does resembles what Eliyahu does. "V'zemi mashi chazik ma'amar ha'omer Pinchas Eliyahu," which strengthens the whole Pinchas Eliyahu connection. Now, of course, that only assumes that this is the Navi, as opposed to the other view, which is that this is the Malach, in which case there should be no association of Pinchas Eliyahu going on here. Okay. So, Gideon's reaction. Gideon says, "Vayomer Gideon, aha, Hashem Elokim." He says, aha, which is an exclamation, like, wow. "Ki al kein ra'isi malach Hashem panim el panim." Did you see what I saw? I just saw a malach of God face to face. "Vayomer lo Hashem," and God says to him, "Shalom," and again, that could be the malach speaking. Right, so he left, in the sense that he's no longer visible. But so he's just talking, but the voice conveys this back to him. Whatever voice it was that I remember, keep in mind, for Malach, space isn't an issue. Like, he's here, he's there, doesn't really matter. He doesn't see him. So he says, "Shalom lecha, al tira, peace to you, have no fear. Lo tamus," he says, "don't worry, you're not going to die." Because that's the normal assumption, right? In Tanakh, is of people who see Malachim, is that they're done for. "Va'yiven Hashem Gideon Mizbeach Lashem." So Gideon builds a Mizbeach for God there. "Va'yikra lo Hashem Shalom." I'm going to have to come back to how to translate that. That's not clear. "Ad hayom hazet," to this very day, "odenu be'ofras Avi Ha'ezri." It's still in Ofrat of Aviezer, the family of Aviezer. And again, whenever we say "until this very day," our assumption of "until this very day" is that it's when this is canonized by the Anshei Knesset HaGedola, or when it's written down by whoever wrote it down, although there are occasional "ad hayom hazez" that show up that actually mean, no, here until now. Okay. What questions arise in these last few psukim in terms of Gideon's reaction and what he does? Or is this straightforward?
How many angels has he seen in this day?
Apparently enough, huh?
He recognized it right away.
Well, I think it's the miracle that does it. You know, burning the carbon with his walking stick.
So he's reassured. He removes the plates.
Yeah.
But if he can't get his staff, are you allowed to build his staff?
Why shouldn't you be allowed to?
There's a place in there.
You have a Mishkan in Shiloh.
And it wasn't their problem when... I mean, they were all right back.
And they wanted to build
it. They wanted to build it, and I created them.
You're not allowed to just build that part.
Correct. You're not allowed to build a Mizbeach outside of Shiloh during this period of time. We saw the Mishnayos in Tzvachim, so we're actually going to deal with that in a little bit. But that's one problem. Maybe you didn't bring a carbon. You just build a Mizbeach. But that's one problem here. This business of Vayikra lo Hashem Shalom is entirely unclear. What does that mean? I mean, the first part, Vayomer lo Hashem Shalom in Pasuk Chaf Gimel, right, is clear. It's a message of reassurance. He thinks he's going to die because he saw Malach, and the answer is no, you're going to be okay. But then Chaf Dalid, who called what Shalom? How do your translations work this?
Gideon.
It says, Gideon what? What did he say?
Gideon realized in English, and Gideon said, "Alas, my Lord, Hashem Elohim."
No, that's in Chaf Dalet.
Oh, and called it. He built an altar and called it.
He built an altar and called it Hashem Shalom. Hashem Shalom.
This says, "Lord who bestows peace." Here, Hashem is a source of
Hashem is the source of our peace. Okay. The Sansino one that you have.
It actually writes out Shem Hashem in English.
Okay, but who's speaking?
Gideon
is speaking. Okay. So there are actually multiple ways to take this. They're taking it the way that Rashi takes it. There's a Tosos that takes it this way. Mitzudat David does. I brought it on the sheet in number two. I took you the Mitzudat David's couple of words. Ho Amar Li Hashem Shalom. This is where God said shalom to me. I was afraid. I thought I was going to die. And Hashem said shalom to me. Which is an easy way to read it. The Malbim takes it differently in source number 3. The Malbim says, Lefi apshat, the simple read, Perusho shehashem kara lo shalom. The simple explanation is that God said of the Mizbeach, or maybe he could be saying God said of Gidon. The truth is you could read it that way. But I don't think so. As you read the sentence, you'll see why. He adds in parentheses, V'chein das bal ha-te'amim shesam ha-tipcha al Hashem. If you're familiar with how the trup works, right? I said last week, you need to lay more often. That wasn't a joke. The Gemara Nedarim says that women, just like men, are supposed to be taught how to lay. Whether you're ever going to lay is a different story, involving a very long halakhic shiur. But the Gemara Nedarim, the Gemara Nedarim says explicitly that part of teaching your daughters is to teach them, the trup. Because you can't read Tanakh properly without knowing how to break things up. You need it. That's also true. My mother taught me.
Really? Does anyone?
Yeah. Thank you. All right. Enough of that. But the point is, look at the trap now. Exactly. It stops after Hashem. Vayikra lo Hashem. If you look at it, the tipcha is the note that's under Hashem's name there. That note is a pause. That's usually like it's a break between the word that it's on and the word that comes afterwards. So, says the Malbim, it should be read, the way to read it is, Vayikra lo Hashem, shalom. God said of it, shalom. That's what the Malbim is saying here.
God called it.
Right, and now you'll see why. He says, "Vrotz lomar," means to say, "Sha'achar shivnei iro hayu ovdei avodah zara." The people of his city were idolaters. V'haya misyarei sheyafriu ma'asav kmo shaharsu es hamizbeach hasheni shenivna achar zeh al hamizbeach hazeh kmo sheyachtav achar zeh. He says, "We're going to see a later mizbeach that he's going to build, which they're going to destroy." So Gidon assumed that they were going to destroy this one because they're Baal worshippers. They're going to see a Mizbeach he built for God and they're going to demolish it. So Mizbeach Hazek, Kara Hashem Lo, Shalom. So God called this Mizbeach Shalom, Shalom Harsu B'nei Ha'ir, because it in fact would not be demolished by the residents.
Why would they destroy it?
Because
God named it?
It doesn't happen. They don't know that Hashem named it this, but it has Hashem's protection, and therefore it doesn't end up getting destroyed. And it is there in Afrat till today to remember the miracle.
How would he know the significance of naming it Shalom?
Because Shalom means peace, safety.
He doesn't know about the second. Gidon doesn't know about the
second. No, but he knows his neighbors.
Right.
He knows that they're idolaters. He doesn't know the second one's going to be destroyed, therefore I'm scared for the first. He knows my neighbors aren't going to like the fact that there's a mizbeach for God here. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so he takes that to mean that God's looking after
us. God's correct. Yes.
Correct.
How does he know that God called it Shalom? The malach left already.
Because just like the malach said to him Shalom in the previous pasuk after he left, the voice comes to him regardless. Right. So, The second way to take it, the first way to take it, I think, is the way your translations take it, which is that the speaker here is Gidon, and he is naming it Shalom, presumably because Hashem told him, Shalom, you're going to be safe. The second way to take it, though, Malbim's way to take it, I think, is also compelling. It's that Hashem says of it, Shalom, meaning the Mizbeach is going to be safe. And then there's a third approach, which is pure drash. But I mentioned this already last week as an introduction. Asur la'adam she'yitin shalom l'chaveiro b'beis ha'merachatz. You're not allowed to greet somebody with the word shalom in a bathhouse. Mishum shenemar v'yikra lo Hashem shalom. It reads it as he called the mizbeach Hashem shalom. God is shalom. In other words, shalom is part of Hashem's name. Which we said in that Gemara that we saw last week when we talked about greeting people with Hashem's name and we talked about Shalom Aleichem, that Shalom is actually a name of Hashem as well. That Gemara is building on our pasuk here. that won't be read in terms of the story. It doesn't fit the story, but it's the Gemara's drash on that line. So what we've seen is that Gideon is approached by either a Malach or a Navi to lead the Jews from under Midian. He might be selected because he is wonderful. He's a defender of the Jews. He might be selected because of his position near his father Yoash, who is the host of the local idols, as we're going to see, and therefore he's in position to attack the Avodah Zarah. It isn't about his traits, it's about the fact that he's properly placed. Or none of it. It could be that he's just picked, and then he's given strength by this Navi or Malach who shows up, and then he was nobody beforehand. He was just like everybody else. We don't know. The Navi is deliberately vague in describing this. There are many parallels here to Abraham and Moshe, which I think carries a message that all the old salvations, all the miracles Hashem did in the past can recur. Look at this. And I brought you on the sheet four connections to Abraham, right? One is going to be him smashing his father's Mizbeach, not idols, as we're going to see. Second, he used the word Bama. How do I know? Which is what Abraham said, Bama yidna ki yirashena. He offers three ephah, right, to them. I wrote in matzah, but actually, again, that's the Lot story, not the Abraham story. I shouldn't have put that there on the sheet. It's just the three ephah one.
One ephah is three salah, right?
Well, one ephah, right, it's one ephah, which is three salah, right? It's a mistake on the sheet. The one ephah and no matzah. Okay, horseradish on that. And then last, the fact that he asks for a sign, which is parallel to Abraham's request, Bamayidaki Hiroshana. On the other hand, we have four parallels to Moshe. He begins by defending the Jews, and Moshe is a defender of the Jews throughout his career. He refuses the mission, right? He says, my group were the smallest of the tribes, who am I? Third, Hashem says to him, Ki ehye imach, I will be with you. Same words he used with Moshe. And Moshe also gets signs from Hashem. When Moshe says they won't believe me, Hashem gives him signs. Here, the signs are not about belief, about the nation believing, but the fact that Hashem gives him signs is another parallel. I actually found online, I was looking into a different part of the story, which we're going to get to in a bit. And I was trying to find anyone who discussed this other part of the story that we're going to get to. I didn't find that. But I did come across an article by Rav Bazak, from Gush, called something like Ma Bein Avraham LeGidon. What's the difference between Avraham and Gidon? But he didn't add anything. He got the same ones that we did, so we didn't miss anything. Okay, so now we move on to Gidon's first mission. Remember that I said to you when we introduced this that the part of the discussion about the signs, I think, is the idea that if Hashem is going to expect us to do something miraculous, to do something wondrous, He is also going to do something on our behalf. So the first sign leads to the first mission. And what we're going to see is three rounds of this. Three signs, three missions. That's the way it's going to play out. So we have the sign. Now let's see what he has to do. Pasuk Chaf Hei. And here, at this point, we're going to see Gideon speaking to God throughout. And we're not going to know, is God speaking to him because he has the Malach coming back to him? Is something being conveyed by Pinchas? The Ralbag's take is that Pinchas keeps coming back, or whoever this Navi is, keeps coming back, and every time it's going to say, God speaks to Gideon, it's the Navi. However, Abarbanel says absolutely not. He says Gideon becomes a Navi. Don't underrate Gideon. And if we will say, as we already noted, that Gideon is labeled, you know, a lightweight, right? Moshe, Aaron, Shmuel on one side, Gideon, Yiftach, and Shimshon on the other, the answer may be, you'd be a lightweight too if you were compared to Moshe, Aaron, and Shmuel. Mm-hmm. The fact that he's called a lightweight only means in relation to those giants. It doesn't mean that he's a nobody and that he can be a Navi as well. Okay, so let's see what happens. We'll read the opening three psukim first. Vayihi balayla hahu. We're now in chapter 6, sentence 25. Vayihi balayla hahu. And we always like balayla hahus in Tanakh. That always indicates something's up. That night, Vayomer lo Hashem, and God says to him, again, via his own nevuah or message through a Navi, Kach es par hashor asher li avicha, ufar hasheni sheva shanim. Take the par hashor, I looked in a translation last night, or the other night, on this, and it said bullock for par hashor. Is that basically what you have?
Young bull.
Second
bull.
Young bull. Okay. Yeah, par hashor is a very odd term. Par is usually a male cow, right? That's usually a par, and shor is an ox, which is a different animal. So we're going to have to come back to that to explain what a par hashor is then. Well, I'll say it now. It's not like a deep point. But the Dan Mikra says par hashor means a male shor. Just like a par normally as a standalone is the male cow, you know, it's the bull, so too it's a male shor. Rashi says that it means the choicest shor, the best shor, because a par is normally a large animal. And then Radak says it's actually a shor-sized par. The other way around. Notice the modifier is par instead of the modifier being shor. It's a shor, which is the size of a par. So the answer is, I don't know. It's a bullock. Fine. The upar hasheni, and then the second one, which is 7 years. We have to explain that one. We're going to come back to that one. V'harasta is mizbach ha-baal asher li-avicha. Destroy the mizbach of the baal that your father has. V'as ha-asherah asher alav tichros. And cut down the asherah that's on it. Asherah, we've discussed before, is a form of tree worship. Either a spirit that's under the tree or it's the tree itself. That's its own debate. But it's a type of worship which existed back in the day. We had this discussion about Asherah and Astarte. I think, I don't remember if it was in the beginning of Shoftim or the end of Yoshua, but we did talk about it. Anyway, the beginning of Shoftim. Uvanisa mizbeach l'shem elokecha al rosh hama'oz hazeh b'ma'aracha. And you will build a mizbeach for Hashem, your God, on the top of the ma'oz. Ma'oz, source of strength, fortress, like Ma'oz Sur, right? So we need to know what this Ma'oz is. B'ma'aracha, in the arrangement, literally. So we need to know what that is. It's the ma'aracha of the Ma'oz, perhaps, we'll have to see. V'lakachta es ha'parasheni, and you need to take the second bowl. V'ha'alisa ola ba'atzei ha'asherah asher tichros. And you're going to take the wood from the asherah, and you're going to use it to burn the body of the second bull. So you're burning the bull as a karban to God, outside of the Mishkan and Shiloh, using the wood from the asherah. That's what God tells him to do. Pasuk Chav Zayin, sentence 27, and then we'll come back to this whole thing. Vayikach Gidon asara nashim me'avadav. Gidon takes 10 servants. So apparently Yoash was a wealthy man, not only a landowner, but somebody of some wealth. He has 10 servants he brings with him. Vayas kasher diber elav Hashem, and he did as Hashem told him. Vayi kasher yarei es beis aviv ves anshei ha'ir me'asos yomam. But he was afraid of his family. He's afraid of the neighbors. He doesn't want to do it at night. Vayas Laila. So he does it at night. 10 people. Right? Like that word's not going to get out. But he does it at night. Okay. Questions on these psukim, the mission and what Gidon does. Yeah?
Well, 7 years is not a coincidence then when their whole problem started.
Good.
7 years.
7 years is a big number for them. 7 years. They've been under Midian for 7 years. Good. So what does that say to me?
It's not their bowl, or they're fattening it up for the other people.
Right. So first we need to know, what does 7 years mean in the context of the bowl? Is this a 7-year-old bowl? I find that odd. Because generally for karbanos, we use it in, you know, the animal changes names in the course of its age. At each level, at each age, it's given a different name. Par, I think, if I remember correctly, is 3 years old. And that's usually what we'll use for certain karbanos. 7-year-old bull is awfully old.
And big.
I imagine big.
Like, the first one.
No, they're both big. They're both big. That's not the problem. The problem is, why are you bringing this old animal? You know, why are you bringing a 7-year-old bull?
It's significant. What time?
So it must have significance.
That how the time has gone by and how it, you know, shows the aging of the...
Could be. Yeah, Ruth, you were going to say?
I was going to say, had this bull been designated for
holy purpose by these.
Mm-hmm. Quite possibly. I mean, we said he took the first one from his father and then the second. It didn't say who owned the second one. Except that it has to be a known one, because it says, Upar Hasheni Sheva Shanim. If it meant just take a 7-year-old bull, it would say Upar Sheva Shanim. The hay is a definite object, right? The 7-year-old bull. So it's got to be one that he knows.
It belongs to the Midianites.
So, if it were a Midianite one, that would be odd. Why would it be here in this Jewish town?
No,
the Midianites aren't in the habit of giving Jews animals.
Presumably, his father.
No, the first one belonged to his father. The second one is something separate. So that's one thing we need to know about. Not to mention the fact that you're bringing a carbon outside of Shiloh. And also, here's another problem. What if you don't do with the two animals? Not so quick. Not so fast.
Second one. Not the first one.
Yeah. The second one is going to be a carbon. What about the first? Burgers. I don't know. Like, what did he do? Sorry. We're vegetarian at home, so. So we need to understand what's going on. So first of all, the two bulls. We already explained a little bit about the Par HaShor. Now, in terms of the Par Sheni Sheva Shanim, so the Da'at Mikra here makes the point. He says it was a 7-year-aged bull. The Da'at Mikra suggests that they aged their karbanos to be 7 years old before they brought them because of all the associations with the number 7. In other words, 7 historically was taken in various cultures, ours and others, as a number of great significance. Right? We have 7 for Shemitah, 7 days of the week, 7 cycles of Shemitah leads to a Yovel. You know, we have on and on and on. The sevens that we believe are important. So apparently the Jews there, worshipping Baal, also believe in 7 being significant, and so the Da'at Mikra says they aged the karban 7 years. However, Ralbag and Malbim pick up on it and say, time out, there's something else going on, because, as you noted, 7 years is the length of time they've been under Midian. So take a look at source number, actually before I get to number, no, there it is, number 5, there it is. Ralbag says, right? They were set aside for 7 years. It sounds like he believes that the first one, his father's one, was also a 7-year bull. That means they were already idolatrous at the beginning of being subdued by Midian. Because they'd been under Midian for 7 years. Right, so so Ralbag says that this highlights for Gidon and for us as readers that it's not that the Jews were conquered by Midian and then they went bad. They've been idolatrous from the start. That's the message that Ralbag sees here. Malbim has a slightly different take. He picks up on the same fact that it's 7 years, and he says something interesting in his own right. He says in number 6, Shebe'ez hechelu Midyan limshol al Yisrael, from the time when Midyan began to reign over Israel, Nadru lahakriv par hazel la'avodah zarah, Eis yivashu mi Midyan. They vowed to the Avodah Zarah, when you rescue us from Midyan, we're going to bring this carbon. And now they've been waiting 7 years. they're still waiting. Yes, Diane?
If you go back to the beginning of the Parsha,
yeah.
They would, the Midianites come, and they kept destroying all the stuff. There was no sustenance in Israel, nor sheep, nor ox, nor donkey. So every animal gets killed. How does this guy save 7 years?
And the answer is because it's dedicated for the god they worship also.
And so that one...
They leave that alone. Yeah, they leave it alone because of that. That would be my understanding. And maybe that's how we know, because it probably didn't say that they had been dedicated for the Avodah Zarah. But maybe that's the clue.
Yeah.
Jews believe a lot longer than 7 years, you know.
No, but they weren't doing anything. Did they still believe that God was going to save them?
Well, they believe that they believe the Avodah Zarah is going to save them.
Oh,
Yeah, that's what Malbim is saying. They've been waiting for their Mashiach Avodah Zarah to come along.
Zarah goes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the Midianites are also out, the same Baal gods? The same believers on the
same ones.
Guy.
Yeah. Yeah, they were local Baal units, if you will, franchises. Like the Baal Peor is in Peor, but there's Baal Bek also. There are Baalim, you know, as they're actually identified in the Torah. There are Baalim in different places. It's Baal X, Baal Y. So yes, but it was all worship of the Baal. Okay. Good. Well, not good, but that's the nature of the 7 years and what it says about their commitment to Avodah Zarah, to idolatry. But he only uses the second one. So why does he take the first one? So Abar Benel is ever practical. I love him. I don't think this is true, but I love him anyway. He says, the first animal was owned by whom?
His father.
Right? So if Gideon does this, right? If Gideon goes ahead and just takes the 7-year fattened one for the Avodah Zarah, the community's one, doesn't take his father's animal, then people are going to assume that Yoash was somehow in on it. So he takes his father's animal also, not to bring as a carbon, but just that he'll have plausible deniability. Like, oh, we lost an animal also. Clearly somebody came in and raided us and took everything. I think that doesn't really work. The reason I think it doesn't work is because, as we'll see in the next psukim, it's going to be public anyway. Everyone is going to find out. You built a mizbeach there. People are going to realize it was you, especially because you told 10 people to help you. That's not really the way to keep a secret. Now, you could argue that point, but that's Abar Benel's approach. Dat Mikra says, no, you need the animal for a different purpose. You have all these pieces from the old mizbeach that they had set up for the Baal. Not to mention the wood from the Asherah that you have to, so you need some way to lug that. So I would have said it's the 10 men. But he says it's also the animal. That's what, using it to transport the pieces. But Radak and Ralbag give a different answer. I brought it for you from Ralbag in number 7 on the sheet. He says, V'yidmesh shehei miso. He says, I think he killed the other animal. Not as a carbon, but he killed it. Ba'ofen shelo ye'enu mimenu k'din ha'mukza. So that they shouldn't benefit from it like any entity dedicated for idolatry. Muktza means something that is set aside. Muktza does not mean things I don't want my kids to do on Shabbos. Muktza means that which has been designated for something. So the laws of Shabbos are things that have been designated for a use that's not a Shabbos use are off limits for handling on Shabbos. Loose translation of muktza there. But the term muktza here is that which has been designated for Avodah Zarah, and you're not supposed to benefit from such things. So therefore, he kills the animal so they won't use it. And it didn't need to say that in the psukim, because that's just the law of the Torah. So it didn't need to say, and he killed this one, because obviously he killed it. What else was he going to do? That's the way that that Ralbag, as well as Radak, read this. And that last piece from Ralbag is actually the most interesting part for me, because that's a classic question. Why don't we find people in Tanakh doing generic mitzvos? We find it if they do something that relates to whatever's at hand. They celebrated a Pesach, and it was a big celebration, and then we get it. But overall, we don't really find information on random mitzvahs that people did. We don't find he bought new clothing and he took it to the shatnez checker and whatever. I mean, maybe because he knew how to recognize wool and linen and he didn't need a checker, fine. But we don't find it in general. And so Ralbach's approach is going to be, because it's not essential to the story. And even this, which involves something in the story, we don't need to really go into it. It's not germane, it's not going to be mentioned. So he's told to demolish the mizbeach and build a new mizbeach and bring a carbon on this new mizbeach. So take a look at source number 8. The Hebrew's on the bottom of one side, English top of the next side. Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana. Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana says, Shmona Devarim Hitiru Ba'oso Laila. 8 things were permitted that night. Meaning, what Gideon did is actually not just a violation of one law. He broke 8 laws. Number 1, chutz. He's bringing a carbon outside of Shiloh. Not allowed to do that. the light. He's bringing carbon at night. You're not allowed to do avoda at night. No carbonos are brought at night ever. There's no such thing. Vizarus, he's not a Kohen. Uklei Shares. And not only that, he doesn't have the vessels that are supposed to be used to bring a carbon. Big Day Kahuna, whatever he's supposed to have, whatever he's supposed to be using. Maybe not clothing of Kohen, he's not a Kohen, but the vessels that are used for the carbon. Uklei Asherah, not to mention, he's using the vessels that they use to serve the Asherah. Those are off limits. Va'atzei Asherah, he's using the wood of the Asherah. You're not allowed to benefit from an Asherah. Umutza, he's using an animal that was designated for the Avodah Zarah, right? One of them he killed, but the other one he brought as a carbon. V'ne'evad, and not to mention, it was something that was worshipped. I'm not sure what they mean in terms of what was worshipped. Was the animal worshipped? Was the wood worshipped? And that's part of this. I'm not clear on that. But that's the list of eight which the Gemara identifies, and Rabbi Avram, the son of the Rambam, was asked about this, and he said, yeah, the point of the Gemara is that it's Haras Shah. This was a ruling of the moment by whatever Nevuah Gidon is receiving, saying, normally we don't do this, but just like Eliyahu and Har HaKarmel and a few other cases found in Tanakh, this was considered to be something that was important. So now we have to ask the question, what was so important here? What did Gidon do here that was so crucial that it justified breaking eight different rules? What's the message in what Gideon did?
Well, that their worship was worthless.
It's the rejection of the Avodah Zarah, right? That would be one way to take it. It's not just rejection of the Avodah Zarah, but conversion of it to service of Hashem. In other words, he could have avoided breaking a lot of these rules if he had just smashed the Mizbeach, cut down the Asherah, killed the animals, and been done with it. But it's not just rejection of the Avodah Zarah, it's conversion of the Avodah Zarah for service of Hashem. You follow? Mm-hmm. That, I think, is a critical element. Take a look at the Malbim in source number 9. He only emphasizes the rejection, but the conversion is part of it. He says, "Ubezen iskayim hakavana ha'elyona." This fulfilled the divine goal. La'archikam al yedei ma'aseh hazos mi'avodah zarah, to distance them from avodah zarah by doing this. V'zeh haya hachana el ha'teshua asher yivtiach. This prepared them for the rescue that Gideon had been promised. Because they couldn't be rescued while they still believed in the Baal. They had to be weaned off of Baal, and this is the way it's going to happen. So that's one take. And that justifies breaking all the rules in order to do this.
So he was traumatic in an unusual way.
Yeah. But I think there's another way to take it.
An irony, sort of. Ironic that he used, you know, what they considered holy, and he transferred it to use it for.
He's taking about a zarah and making it something.
Make a demonstration.
Correct, which normally we don't do. Normally we avoid that. There are a whole bunch of shilos related to buying a church and converting it into a shul, right? The whether you're allowed to use anything from avodah zarah. To then serve Hashem. It's a whole Gemara and Avodah Zarah. There's a lot of discussion about this.
Didn't Hashem command him to do it, though? So, of course he's going to do it.
Right, well, the question is not how is it allowed, you're right, but the question is why? Why make him break these rules? What's the message? Yeah, no, you're 100% right. We would be surprised if we read this and it didn't end with, and Gideon did that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's more impactful when you break the rules. And it's commanded, so then it really sends a harder message.
Not right. Like, okay, the rule breaking itself is part of the message.
And he knows that he's going to be okay. He's already told him, you'll be safe.
Right.
And it's okay that you know, whatever I tell you to do, you'll be okay.
Right. I'm definitely not surprised that he actually goes in and does it. He's gotten a sign from God, you know, everything in that sense. You know, the big question is endangering himself. That we still have to get to. But there's another side to this. The message is not only about what Gideon has done for the Jews with this. Take a look at Ralbag in source number 10. Who has Sela? The first half of what Ralbag notes here is something we have to still see. But he says that the place where he does this, the Ma'oz, is Hu HaSela SheHiniach Alav HaBasar BeHamasas. It's the same rock. I told you to keep your eye on the rock. It's the same rock. The Ma'oz, the strong place, is the place where he had put the flour and he had put the meat, or he put the bread and the meat, and then the Malach performed the sign. The Ma'aracha on that is the area on the rock that's arranged for this. But the key for now is the second half. V'hinei Haisa HaKavana LaHosif B'Gidon Emuna B'Hashem Yisbarach. The point was to help Gidon feel more confident. Abarbanel says this also. You're having Gidon directly reject his idolatrous heritage successfully, and that will increase his faith in Hashem. So it's a hard thing to ask him to do in the first place. But having done it, he will now be a different person. So he builds the Mizbeach on the Ma'oz, on the place where he had placed the meat and the matzos beforehand. Malbim actually adds to this. Malbim thinks that he built the new Mizbeach with the stones from the old one, which would, you know, add yet another dimension to this. And he gets 10 men to go with him and do it. But he does it at night out of fear of the people. So why does he get 10 men? Right, because he had psychiatry afterwards. What is he?
But why 10? Because he would be the 10th if he got 9.
Yeah, it's not really minion, no. Unless he didn't count himself because he was a former idolater. No, that's not.
Everyone an idolater?
Yeah.
Which men did he get?
Well, he got his slaves. He got his slaves, which means they are part of an idolatrous household. Yes. So
maybe it's so that they would see what happened, and so that would sort of convert them.
Right. So one possibility, and that's along the lines of one idea that Ralbag suggests, is that it's Kiddush Hashem. Mm-hmm. I am doing this, and I'm doing it in front of them. Yes. There is a concept of Kiddush Hashem in front of them. The Gemara in Sanhedrin talks about it, including among non-Jews. Yeah. Although they were Jewish. I would assume so, only because I can't imagine Jews having Midianite servants in this kind of an environment, although there were other minorities. It could be that, theoretically, it could be some other Canaanite group that they had. It doesn't have to be. We don't know.
Didn't they have servants that weren't actually slaves as such?
Yeah, I mean, the word Eved here may not mean Eved in the slave sense. We don't know. We're missing information. The other possibility he suggests is just because this is a really big job. He didn't have a choice. He couldn't do it himself. He's strong. He can, you know, pound the wheat himself. But there are limits. So that's what Gidon does, which now leads us to the city's reaction. Watch what happens here. This is fascinating. We're not going to finish it, but we'll at least start it. So the psukim that we're going to read are Chaf Ches to Lamed Beis, 28-32. Vayashkimu anshei ha'ir b'voker. Does anyone not know what's coming in this story? Because then I would ask you, like, so what do you think is going to happen? If you've read ahead, then it's not good. You don't know. So what would you imagine is going to happen to get? I'm going to put you on the spot. But think, all right, think for yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, his father. That's what I would have expected. And we have a reason to think his father would be furious. We've seen this movie before. Right? What happened the last time, right? He got thrown into a furnace. So look at what happens here. Vayashkimu anshei ha'ir b'boker. The people get up early in the morning. They were early risers. V'hinei nutatz mizbeach ha'bal. Mizbeach ha'bal. Apparently, they get up early to go daven shachris at the Baal, because they all went to the mizbeach, or at least some of them did, because they found it. It's destroyed. V'asherah asher alav karasa. And the asherah has been chopped down. V'esapara sheni ho'ala ala mizbeach ha'banui. And the second bull was brought up as a carbon. The commentators suggest there were bones lying around or something. Like, how else do they know?
How do they know it's that one?
Right. Well, they see it's missing. Why? And they see the bones and just kind of make the assumption.
Sitting there next to the Asherah?
Presumably, that's where the pen is. Right, you keep them all together.
Someone would have gone first thing in the morning to feed it or something.
Yeah. So the second bull is brought as a carbon. I'm now just thinking about, you can't adopt all of the different views here in terms of what the locations were. Because we saw an earlier discussion about the stone where Gidon brought the thing for the Malach being in the place where he had been beating the wheat in the wine cellar, right? But you can't have that and also have the carbon being brought on that spot. because that would mean that the Mizbeach of Baal had been in their wine press, in their wine cellar. That just makes no sense. So you can't adopt all the different location-oriented commentaries here. Something isn't going to be consistent. In any case, they're very upset. So one says to the next in Pasuk Chaf Tes, and it's 29, who did this? They do an investigation, and they ask, and they said, Gidon ben Yoash asah davar hazeh. Somebody rats out Gidon. Right? Somebody among the ten, or just someone who was looking out their window at night, whatever it is, Gidon did it. Vayomaru and Shehair al Yoash. So they say to Yoash, Hutseyas bin Chaviyamos. He says, take out the kid, he's gonna die. Kinasatas Mizbach HaBaal, because he destroyed the Mizbach of the Baal, the Chicharasa Asherah Asheralav, and he chopped down the Asherah that was over it. Vayomer Yoash, L'chol Asheramdu Alav, and Yoash says to all the people who are standing upon him, to be omade Alav is an interesting turn of phrase. It often indicates aggression. I do sort of wonder, though, because with Avram and the Malachim, it says, "V'hu omeid aleihem," to serve them. But usually it's aggression, like, "V'yakel aleihem korach eskal ha'edag." To be omeid al somebody suggests, you know, not respecting personal space. So they all rally against Yoash. Yoash says to them, "Ha'atem trivun la'baal." Are you going to fight on behalf of Baal? Imatem toshiun oso, are you going to save Baal? Baal can fight for himself. Asheyarivlo, you must, adaboker. Now, that phrase is a very hard phrase to translate. There are multiple ways you can take it. In the Art Scroll, how do they translate that phrase? Asheyarivlo, you must, adaboker.
Whoever aggrieves him should die by morning.
Whoever aggrieves
him should die by morning.
So in other words, whoever attacked Baal should die by morning. Presumably it's the next morning, because they...
Baal is a god.
Right, well, I'm getting to the rest of the sentence. But the first way to take it is that he's saying whoever attacked Baal is going to die, because Baal's going to take care of it. That's one way to take it. There are other translations here. Sansino says what? V, I think you have this, Sansino.
He that will contend for him shall be put to death before morning.
Oh, shall be put to death before morning, but not by us.
If
then
he'd be a god. Then
right, right. That's the same as the Art Scroll, in other words. Mm-hmm. You have the...
he that will contend for him shall be put to death, tarry until morning.
Good. So that's the second way to take it. Not Baal is going to take care of it, but whoever will fight on behalf of Baal shall be put to death before tomorrow morning. In other words, he's saying, if any of you touches my son, he's dead. Why? For the same reason. Both readings take the same read for the rest of the pasuk. Im Elohim hu, yarev lo, kinasatzes mizbecho. If he's a god, I guess that's Elohim there. If he's a god, let him fight for himself. Because this person, Gidon, has smashed his mizbeach. So two different ways to take his argument. And there's actually a third way, which we'll have to see as well. But the basic thrust of it is, we're not going to touch him. Baal is going to take care of this himself.
Why was his father not as angry as he is?
Yeah. Oh, why? What happened?
Maybe the father didn't really. He was sort of ambivalent about believing.
Well, if he was, why did he have the idol on his property?
Yeah, well, he did it to be accepted. Yes.
But the whole city keeps their idol with him. I mean, he's not the nobody.
So he's like the priest of the Baal. Like, he's a religious man. So I guess for him, he's saying, you know, he's such a devout believer in this Baal.
You think he's sincere?
No, I'm serious. And he's a sincere, you know, and
that's
he believes it.
Right. So let's read the last sentence in the section. Vayikralo bayomahu Yerubal. Not only does Mizbeach get a name in this story, but Gidon gets a new name. Mm-hmm. He, unclear if he is Yoash or he is random people, call him Yerubal. Lemor Yarev bo habaal kinasatz es Mizbecho. They call him Yerubal, saying Baal should fight against him because he destroyed the Mizbeach. That's also very strange. Especially because of what Yerubal should mean.
Fear.
Good. It should mean fear. It means, the Yerubal at its core means Baal fearing. And now it's been turned to mean Baal will fight him. That's the idea. So there's an awful lot going on in these psukim. The primary question being, what in the world happened to Yoash? We thought Yoash was loyal to Avodah Zarah. Lo and behold, he defends his son. It could be as simple as, you know, it's his son. But apparently it didn't stop Terach.
Well,
and it didn't stop Abraham either, with Yitzchak.
Well, maybe if he saw that Gideon was able to do this, it meant that Baal didn't really have any power
right.
to stop him.
Maybe he took the message to heart.
So, yeah.
No, he saw the light, so to speak. And that, I think, is the most reasonable explanation. It's the most reasonable one that I can think of, is that he actually sees this and he says, you know, Baal really isn't powerful. Not to mention, it's been 7 years that we've been holding this animal. but he refuses to turn him over. So what we're going to talk about next time will be to conclude this piece here, and the comparison to Avraham's experience, and then move on from that into Gideon's second encounter and second set of miracles next time. Thank you very much.